This is The Mitch Gray Show, where we are bringing the art of humanity back to leadership. Subscribe to The Mitch Gray Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel, Mitch Gray Media, where you'll find each of our episodes and other resources that will equip, inspire, and empower you to lead well. And now, The Mitch Gray Show.
What is up, brothers and sisters? Welcome to The Mitch Gray Show. Today, we are interviewing another new friend, Mr. Kevin Whelan. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mitch. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Kevin, you are a marketing advisor and mentor. We're going to get into that a little bit more in a little bit. But as I'm reading your content on Twitter and as you and I are talking and I'm looking at your stuff online, you have a phrase that I've absolutely found myself enamored by. And that is that you love to advocate for your clients. And so I want to start there. What does that mean to advocate for your clients?
So I really built my entire business around this concept. So it's a really good question. I think a lot of entrepreneurs are out there. We're spending, you know, thousands of dollars on our marketing every month, or not. Some people are spending just a little or none. But as you grow and as your business goes along, you start spending a lot of money every month on your marketing, and that can sometimes create a lot of uncertainty. And also, you know, the people you're buying those services from or the products from. You never really know, you know, what kind of quality you're going to get. You know, unlike other professional designations, you don't quite know whether you're, you know, like there's no formal degree you are required or a license.
Right,
so you're kind of taking a bit of a leap of faith. And I equate it to, like, you know, something I'm not good at. Like I recently bought a new air conditioner last summer and I had no idea which one to buy, right? So I messaged my friend who's in HVAC and he guided me through the options and which ones would last longer and the pros and cons. And obviously I trusted him because he didn't have any incentive to other than just to give me good advice. Whereas I was dealing with different AC providers and they're telling me one thing, but, you know, the quality of the products they were offering were varied and they would only sell the kinds that they were licensed to deal or had the
right
authorization to deal.
Right.
So this whole concept of advocacy is really just about being on the side of my clients and being on the side of the entrepreneur and helping them make decisions, often several thousands of dollars per month or smaller decisions in the case of my smaller clients, so that they can navigate this world of marketing with someone that they can trust, who's agnostic about the work they do. Like, I come at a fixed fee, so I don't get paid to tell you to spend $20,000 or $10,000 on your website. My fees are always the same.
Right.
And I call it like a fiduciary standard. So I like just being on the side of my client and helping them make those decisions. And that's kind of the crux of it.
What's the reaction you've received from clients? You know, this is I don't think it's a new way of doing things. It may be a little bit of a new way of doing things in the marketing industry, because I've had some interactions with larger marketing agencies, et cetera, et cetera. And you're right. The picture you painted is kind of the way it looks. So what's been the response from your clients? Have you said, hey, you know, this is my fee, this is what I'm going to give you, and here's what we're going to accomplish. Do you find them more receptive to that, or?
I think they are, right? I mean, they don't actually care so much about advocacy and this
right
stuff that
right
I do. And to me, I hold myself to a fiduciary standard. So if I introduce someone in my clients to an agency or whatever, I don't take a fee or mark up their time or anything like that. It's all direct introductions. So they care about it only as we go along through the conversation. What they really care about is growing their business,
yes,
and getting there in as straight a line as possible. So often they come to me with challenges, and last year was fraught with them, and or goals, and they want to achieve them. And they know that I help, you know, construct marketing programs that are effective and bring people straight along to that. So they don't really care. But when I unpack my work, I'm different. That's when we start to see the differences. But generally they're cool, that as long as I can help them get to that result. That's all I care about, though.
Yeah, it's about results, right? Especially when you're a business owner or a business leader and you're like, no, I need growth. I need exposure and growth, and that's what it's about. What does marketing look like moving into this year? You alluded to it, and we had a guest on the other day. You know, 2020 was such a crazy time, 2019 moving into 2020. What do things look like? I know companies are kind of shifting and pivoting. Are you seeing some different approaches in the marketing kind of field?
I think, I mean, one thing we sort of really touched on very quickly before this call was this idea of sort of remote teams and more hiring of outsourced people. I think in the areas of marketing, one thing that I'm seeing more and more is, well, first of all, a lot of people had to lay off maybe a healthy staff of internal marketers. And that's always a really difficult thing. But this trend has sort of been happening for a little while, especially in marketing, where you're having more of a distributed team or a remote team. And I play the role in many cases of being like a part-time chief marketing officer for clients that are maybe under $10 million or basically don't have the means to spend $100,000+ on a marketing kind of executive, but they still want some smarts in the room to be able to add to their team. So you're seeing, what I'm seeing is that there's a marketing manager of sorts or a coordinator in house, but then there's sort of these arms and extensions from that person. That person becomes truly more of a manager more so than an implementer, the person doing all the things. So you have that person even reaching, if maybe they're good at design, they'll do the design and then outsource a lot of the rest and manage that process.
Right.
And that's kind of what I'm seeing. So rather than having all these people in house, which you need a lot of in marketing, there's a bit more of this distribution. So I know that's kind of tactical, but that's sort of one of the major shifts I've seen accelerated by COVID in the last year.
And I don't know that that's going to, I don't know if it's going to ever really shift back to the way it was, because I think what companies are finding out is that it's potentially more advantageous to their bottom line and to their streamline if they kind of, you know, have the format that you're talking about. They don't have to have as many employees. They don't have to have as many full-time employees, and they can, you know, work with people like you that can get the work done in a, you know, the right amount of time and make the progress that's needed.
Yeah. I mean, look, it, I have nothing. I think it's nice to have in-house employees when you can afford to have, you know, various specialists, because the marketing is comprised of specialists. You've got writers, designers, web develop, like developers, coders. You've got search engine optimization specialists. You've got advertising specialists. You've got, there's, and I'm not even scratching the surface. So there's a whole bunch. And to think that one person can do it all well is way overly simplistic. It's just really difficult, right? So what we're seeing is now that one person can manage this stuff, and then you get to bring in specialists who are great at their thing. Some people hire a full service agency to do that. I prefer to go with individual solo freelancers. That way, you know, the person you're dealing with, the quality of work you're getting from that person, you're not getting delegated down. And that's how I prefer to work. Right. And then you can turn on or off things like dials on a switch, you know, to get the best results for you.
Right.
So it's highly nimble, and definitely the direction we're headed, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. What, let's say you've got it, you mentioned kind of a business that's a $10 million or less business. I think the category of small business in America is 30 million or less, something like that.
Yeah.
So when you're talking, you know, those are really the volume of businesses, and we're not even talking, you know, the mom and pop corner shops that is kind of the foundation of American economy. And so many people forget. I read a stat the other day that 99% of businesses in America are small business, and like 50 or 60% of those are 10 million or less in revenue. And so when you're talking about a pandemic that we just went through, and for those that were innovative enough to survive, and unfortunately our hearts go out to those that have not been able to survive, but what, let's start kind of with, where do people go? You know, just kind of some easy thoughts, maybe not tips right now, but just some easy kind of comforting thoughts of where those small companies go to really kind of navigate what business can look like going forward.
I think the evergreen answer to this is one that I just believe wholeheartedly in. And the answer to all of your marketing problems are in your customers, specifically your best customers. So what I've seen people do, and it's very inspiring over the last year, is they sort of pivot their business around who's actually out there buying not only what I used to sell, but things that are sort of tangentially related to those things.
Right.
Right. So I think, you know, if you think interest in terms of being customer centric, as everyone from Jeff Bezos straight down to, you know, the local corner store who believes in serving their customers would say, then you're kind of just saying, well, who's out there? What are they needing, and how are those needs changing? Who am I already selling, and what are they, what's changed in their, say, business or their lives? And then how do I deliver and sell something that's related to what my core competency is, but maybe is outside of my typical identity? And I think that's the factor that we have to sort of wrestle with and maybe be willing to change as a business based on our customers, less so on the category we belong to. That's the best way I can approach it.
That's the innovation, right? Is it's like we still have to do what we're good at. We still have to do what our customer base wants, but we've got to innovate in an adaptable way that says we have to try something new, right? Like we have to add to what we're already doing.
Yeah, even if that means having a different identity. Like I had a client that sold to, say, retail companies, right? So your average anyone who's transacting in retail environments. They would sell, you know, money handling products and and other supplies to, you know, like money, you know, just to serve that that retail market, including banks and retailers and others. And what they ended up doing was shifting to selling, in addition to those things, which the demand for those shrunk, obviously, as retail took a really massive hit. But then they also started selling COVID supplies, and because that's what their clients were and customers were needing. Now, it happened that they were in the specialty supplies business and had a competency in finding products and you know, stocking them and then fulfilling those. So it wasn't like an taking advantage of a situation. It was providing a service to their clients who now their needs have shifted, where they may not never have thought of that going into it. And that really, like, that saved their business for the year, where otherwise it would have gone away. So not being scared to do that.
Yeah, really, it's recognizing what's happening and offering the value that you can offer. For them, it was, you know, the supplies that businesses needed to deal with COVID situations. For someone else, it'll be something different. But it's really about staying open-minded to, okay, what we've depended on for the last 10 years has totally changed. And so what can we now, we can still depend on it some. You know, restaurants are a great industry to look at. For the restaurants that said, okay, outdoor dining, so we're going to totally focus on that and curbside service. Man, in a year or two, they're going to double in business from what they used to do because they've expanded their occupancy and they've expanded their services.
Yeah, I think, and that's the other thing. If you've been able to get through 2020, then you've probably done something in your business that's a jetpack, and then that eventually will kind of serve you as additional revenue in the future. You know, and obviously, we don't know how things are going to play out over the next little while. But I, to give you another example, I had a friend who is in a he was a caterer, and he started doing home cooked meals. So in so he would do events and stuff, and now he's kind of pivoted, and now he sells these beautiful Sunday dinners and all kinds of. Other kind of home cooked meals, stocking people up. So now it cuts down on groceries, which we're all eating more at home. You get a really high chef quality meal. And so, you know, and now when things get back to sort of normal, as we can quote unquote, that's when he's going to now have two business revenue streams.
Yes.
And it's exciting.
Yeah, that it is exciting for the people that have been the innovators. It's very exciting. So, Kevin, you describe yourself as a marketing advisor and a mentor. I want to focus on the mentor part. You hear that word. So I have a background also in mental health, mentoring and facilitation. You hear the word mentor in kind of other industries. You don't hear it a lot when you talk about marketing and business. What kind of led you to that point? What led you to that concept and that idea of mentoring?
It kind of goes back to that hook, concept of advocacy, right? So, you know, what I noticed happening was a lot of people have been laid off. Some marketing consultants, I happened to be busy all of last year, even though I specialized in an industry that was heavily hit by COVID. A lot of my work is in the co-working or shared office space business. But nonetheless, we got through that and did well, but a lot of people weren't doing as well. And I think my goal was to find a way to contribute back and say, like, who's out there? Maybe their business isn't the slam dunk and they need a bit of help. And so I kind of focused on people like me and people maybe like me a few steps behind. So whether they're freelancers or agency owners in some cases or consultants, I said, how can I help? And I basically started, you know, $10 a month membership. And and what that is like there's a private podcast, and three times a week I'll do an audio and sharing an idea. There's a little community section, and then there's some resources that goes with it. So people ask questions, they get new content delivered to them every week, and it's at a price point that's a no-brainer. And now I've started doing some coaching as well, but you know, that's kind of my goal, is you know, to give back to people that are still on that path and growing along with me.
I love that. I remember asking you on Twitter, actually, because I think that's where we originally connected, was on Twitter through other through common connections, I'm sure. But I was like, $10 a month, is it? I think I messaged you, in fact. It was like, is this real? You're giving this much value for $10 a month?
And it was intended to be that way, right? And maybe somewhere down the line it'll evolve, but and also a lot of people were laid off, you know, so I did know of a lot of as we know, we just talked about, teams were downsized, and a lot of people are getting into marketing consulting for the first time. And I offer just a way that's like transparent. So my prices are fixed. They're all published on my website. And it's a different way of consulting through productized consulting is how I call it. And so anyway, I just wanted to help those folks as well and just sort of be useful as much as I can.
Yeah, I love that, man. Your website's kevin.me, and we'll have that in the show notes as well and a link so people can check that out. But tons of great content. I know you blog quite often. I think you're on an everyday tinge currently. Yeah,
88 days strong right now.
Yeah. So lots of great content. And I, as a writer, my heart goes out to you writing every day and putting that out there. So nice job, man. Nice job.
Thank you. It's a muscle like anything else, right? So, and you won't always, when you start writing, a lot of entrepreneurs are nervous about publishing their own thoughts, mm-hmm. but I think you'd be so surprised that putting your original thoughts into the world, mm-hmm. especially when it's coming from a genuine place, even if you're not a marketing whiz, even if your content is very basic, but you're just like, here's something that I think is useful. I encourage more entrepreneurs to do that, because that personal touch, here's what's going on in our business kind of thing, is really just an effective way for people to connect with you and to really rally around you. So regardless of the business you're in, it's a great way to reach people.
Yeah, I love that. So how did you end up in the marketing industry? All of us have a journey and a story, and I don't think we don't end up by accident where we are today. Tell us a little bit more about how you ended up where you are, and what makes you so passionate for, helping other people succeed.
There's a couple parts to that question for sure. Evolved into this, right? And that word accident is kind of, I think all of our journeys are a little bit of an accident, mm-hmm. or one thing leads to the next and you find yourself in a situation. But I started building websites back in my teens in the early 2000s. Oh, and wow. That was sort of my, I started building them, coding them up. And so that was always a skill that I had. I eventually started selling that as a service, or, people needed it. They're like, oh, you can build a website. So every company I worked for, I ended up being their web designer and did a bunch of graphic design tasks. Eventually, I only figured out much later, after going to school again for like as a post grad for entrepreneurship, I only figured out that there was actually demand for this as a real business. It was kind of weird. I'd kind of neglected it and just sort of taken it for granted. And then I eventually got a job in house at a major law firm here in Canada, and was their web administrator. And a couple of years after that, I had so many people asking me, they're like, oh, can you build a website? And I would kind of moonlight a bit. So I sort of evolved into it from a skill and a passion to turning it into a business. And then I think your other question was around, I guess, was it around the, like, why am I passionate about kind of helping people?
Yeah, what makes you, everyone that's building a business surrounded on customer service, even though they're trying to make money and we're all trying to build a business, there still has to be a passion there for helping people, right? Like if that foundation mm-hmm. isn't there, then your business won't be sustainable. And so, I'm always curious at what led someone to say, hey, I want to help people become better at whatever.
If I were to dig deep, Mitch, which I think is what you're probably looking for. I grew up I'm an immigrant from Ireland, and I grew up, a middle class sort of family. Didn't have more than we needed, didn't have less, we kind of got by as immigrants do. And I always figured that at some point, in order for me to have more than just enough, I would need to sort of like build, having a job would get you so far, but being entrepreneurial would give you more, not only opportunity to earn a good income, but also to fulfill yourself. And my dad was like in sales, and he wasn't always happy. And so I kind of figured there's two parts here. One, if I'm going to make more money, and two, I'm not going to hate my life, I should do some sort of entrepreneurial venture.
Right.
And then during that process, I realized that there's a lot of challenges along the way, and I really lacked mentors along the way. Mm-hmm. I picked up a few, especially when I went back to school for a year doing that entrepreneurship college program. And I had a couple good mentors, but not like I was reaching for them, and I just couldn't find them.
Right.
So I think this idea of we all need help, and I still have business coaches and people I work with, but this idea that I can help someone, pull them along their journey and get them a little closer to their goals allows me to do what I want to do and allows them to fulfill their goals. And I think at the end of my life, I visualize what's going to happen when all of this shakes out, and I know I'm going to be disappointed or happy based on how many people I've been able to help. Yeah. And that gives me my life meaning. So to go as deep on it with you as I can, that's the gist of it.
Yeah, that's the stuff I love, man, is finding out what's someone's real motivation, right? I just feel like if you're in any type of customer service or any type of human relation type work, there has to be a passion for people that lies deep within, because otherwise it's way too stressful and it's way too frustrating oftentimes.
Just like anything.
You do. Yeah. It's just not sustainable. So I want to go back to something you mentioned a few minutes ago, and that is your work with co-working spaces. Mm-hmm. You know, co-working spaces has kind of exploded over the last, gosh, I don't know what, 7 or 8 years or so, maybe five. What I'm noticing in real estate now is so many larger companies and corporations are selling their real estate, or they're starting to rent out kind of as co-working opportunities. So that's an interesting shift. It'll see how sustainable, you know, be interesting to see how sustainable that is. But what are some things that you've seen in the co-working world? Where do you kind of maybe see that going? And then after that, let's talk about, I personally know a few people that are building co-working places. They're doing a pretty good job, but it's interesting the marketing that they kind of, how they approach the co-working industry. And so what's kind of your experience on maybe that?
So co-working is sort of reflective of technology that's happening and the shift that we, as we go into, as society grows and matures, we're getting more globalized, meaning we're, you know, people are working around the world. We're getting more distributed, like we talked about. So what is kind of happening is all companies are looking for both a better experience and greater flexibility. So if you were a company, even 5, 10 years ago, you'd be putting tons of money down, having to build out your space, and then you're committed for 20, 30 years, and it becomes the biggest liability on your balance sheet, you know, because you're obligated to pay that forever. And that's really kind of big overhead. Plus it's landlords, they charge what their market can handle. So they take a bunch of your profit and then they you have to build it yourself. Anyway, the whole value proposition from the individual right up to the multinational is not great, right? Unless you have high means, you're over 500 people. So co-working is this both improvement of the convenience element. It makes it easier to get into an office space and less commitment, but the experience is also better. So spaces are becoming more interesting, more niche, more beautiful. So there's a lot more of that happening. So that's kind of indicative of technology moving the needle on both convenience and flexibility, which is a concept from a book called Trade-Off. So I highly recommend reading that for anybody about this convenience versus experience, basically. So that's co-working in a nutshell. So everybody's benefiting from this shift. So now companies are going partially remote. So their employees, first of all, don't need a central office the way they used to, or there's more satellite teams. So what people are looking for in all areas is access, not ownership. Same with like Uber and, you know, Airbnb and all these kind of companies. You don't need to own something. You can have access to it. And that varies. So that's the industry at large. Yeah. And then the marketing of that is really dependent on who you're trying to reach and all this, who you're trying to reach, basically.
So I kind of want to dig into this because I know we have a few listeners that I'm aware of, at least, that are into the co-working, either ownership or active in kind of co-working spaces. So if you're going to talk about marketing, you just said something that I find interesting, that a co-working space should know who they're going after, who their audience is.
Yeah.
That's really interesting because generalized, you know, everyone makes the mistake of not being focused enough on identifying their customer base. I think that's a mistake everyone makes, but especially for our co-working space, because it's like, okay, we have 10 spaces. We just want to get them rented out, but there is a culture there, right? There's kind of this idealism and culture and subculture that's kind of naturally created. So how would a co-working owner or developer say, okay, here's my customer base, here's who I'm going after? Kind of unwrap that a little bit more.
Well, I mean, if you're going to go after you and I, solo professionals, that's a very different value proposition than if you're going after a satellite corporate office. You may not want to be in the central business district, right? So the location matters. You know, you may be looking for a different price. You may be looking for a different experience. You may be wanting to be around different types of people. Because that's tied to your identity.
Yeah.
So in all businesses, remember back a few minutes ago when I was saying all of your answers are in your ideal customers?
Yes.
It's the same way in here, right? So, you know, I had a marketing professor when I went to school. He was like, you're better off picking a target market and then figuring out what to sell them than you are to create something and then find out who wants to buy it. And as Seth Godin says, you know, don't create a key and then go looking for the lock, like create the lock and then build a key for it. Right. So, that's kind of the concept. So I think one of the, everyone's familiar with WeWork, right? And
yes,
they're,
yes.
I mean, not everyone, but they're a huge company that have burned through just tons, billions of dollars of cash, right?
Right.
I think one of the challenges with them is they're really trying to go after everybody. And that's one of the expensive results, consequences. They almost went bankrupt right before they went to IPO. There's a whole bunch of factors there.
Oh, but wow.
When you don't pick a target market and you try to be for everyone, you end up having to really spread yourself thin. So yes, they have options for everyone from enterprise down to the solo freelancer. But there's an identity factor that gets lost. So the banks don't want to be in there and the freelancers don't want to be around suits. And so you have to kind of create an environment that is suitable for everybody. You're far better unless you've got billions of dollars and backed by SoftBank. And even then they've shown that they can just lose a bunch of money. Your better idea is to say, well, who are we trying to target? Is it one like solo professionals and small teams or mid-sized teams and corporates? And they all need something a little bit different. So that's right. The crux of it is if you have a clear focus and now we're, if you're in a, say a very highly dense area, if you can focus in on a sub target market, that's where you're going to really have, you know, there's co-working spaces for women. There are, you know, there's co-working spaces for like just freelancers, there's for musicians. So you don't have to go that niche, but having a clear focus on who you're trying to target and then creating a, like the best solution for them, such that you're in a category of one. So if you want this and you're this kind of person, we're the only one, we're the best person for you. If you want just any old co-working space, go down the road, there's a bunch right. of them. That's kind of the goal. I think that's how you succeed in marketing, in especially in competitive markets.
Yeah I love that idea, creating the best solution for your customer. Yeah, that's a great
statement. The only way you can do that, like, is if you know who they
are,
right?
Because
you, Mitch, are someone and your office needs would be completely different than someone else, and
right.
all the plans, the pricing, the location, the experience, the design, everything is vastly different, right?
Yeah that's great, man. I wanted to chase that a little bit because like I said, I know in our audience we have some co-working people who are either passionate about co-working or actual owners.
Yep.
And I think there is some real value add there. Let's kind of start talking about, you know, we've totally identified how 2020 ended up and we've identified some of the challenges and barriers and the innovation, et cetera, that businesses had to have. Let's really start digging into moving into 2021. We're here. I actually think I've kind of found myself personally doing this. I think a lot of us are kind of taking our time to really settle some mission and vision and values for 2021, just because it's kind of it feels almost more like a recovery mode than it does a, you know, like most New Year's, it's like, yeah, you're, you know, head full into going into it. And this year kind of feels like, okay, it's okay to take more time. It's okay to be a little slower on the process, to be more strategic. And I really feel like businesses are actually doing that as well. I think they're really taking time to take inventory of their approach. So I believe it's a great time for folks like you to say, hey, when you're planning 2021, when you're looking at your marketing, when you're looking at your energy output, here's some great things to consider. So let's just give people three of those. That small business, that entrepreneur that is sitting here going, oh my gosh, okay, business is growing. We've done some things. We really don't know what we've done because we just had to do it in the moment. Yeah. How do they take inventory? Let's give them three tips of moving into this year, how they can really take advantage of the marketplace, of that energy output, and just three tips they can use to really market their business well moving into this year.
I think the first thing to know is that, you know, there's no going back to normal. Normal is mm-hmm. now permanently going to be different. This is normal and normal will continue to evolve. So forgetting the rear view a little bit and thinking about what will succeed right now. If I were starting a business today, what would it look like? And the way you know that is based on who is out there, who's buying, who's not, and what kinds of things are they buying and needing? Is this a long-term directional change or is this a temporary thing? So first is just resetting doing a reset. Imagine you're starting a new business from scratch. And then, like I said, follow the needs of your customers, follow, you know who they are and build solutions for them. And even if that means you're going to be a completely different business in the process, I think you'll be a healthier one as a result. I don't think it's going to go back and, you know,
right.
Sure, but some business lines will dry up, but
right.
I think that fresh slate, you know, and then make sure that you're in it. That you're still wanting to serve that target market or you're still mm-hmm. wanting to provide those products or services. Because that's key too.
I like that idea. If I were starting a business today, what would it look like? Because again, all of us have done it. We've looked back and gone, oh my gosh, what just happened? Especially if you are, you know, a business, a $10 million business with 30 employees or whatever. You know, I really believe some people made transitions that they didn't have time to think about. It was survival of the fittest, and they innovated enough to survive. And like you said earlier, if they did survive it and even have some growth out of it, that's going to serve them well moving into the future.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we just have to be prepared that, you know, COVID is going to be around for a few more years. Mm-hmm. Best case scenario, hopefully we can get vaccinated and sticks and, mm-hmm. and things kind of, we start going to movies again, which is the thing I miss most
yes,
out of everything.
Please. Same.
You know,
100%.
Give me that terrible popcorn with the fake butter. So that's my goal. But at the same time, I'm always like risk. I'm always avoiding, like, part of my job is to mitigate risk. Right.
Yeah,
so, keep innovating, keep selling what people are looking for, keep being customer centric, talk to your clients and customers and evolve with the times, but don't expect things to just go back. Just expect them to be another couple of years of uncertainty and keep on your toes as much as you can with responding to that.
Yeah, totally agree. And I don't believe we'll ever see that normal again. You know, once the world changes, it kind of changes and you get used to those changes. And I told someone the other day, we as a culture, especially in modern world countries and places, we had grown so in love with convenience.
Yeah.
And when all of that convenience was ripped away, you know, that's why so many people really freaked out, because it was like, you know, the life of convenience was gone per se. When we really look at it, we still get to live a pretty convenient life, even during a pandemic.
We got lucky. I mean, it could have been way worse.
Far worse. Yeah.
So far, yeah.
I want to go into something. Talking about the future, talking about moving forward, talking about, you know, I love your illustration of not looking in the rearview mirror. We've learned from it. We've lived it. It is what it is. We're gonna push forward. What are, for that business, that entrepreneur that is, you've given them some great tips. I love that saying that if you were starting a business today, what would it look like? But for that person, what are maybe some barriers that you've seen them face currently? And then what's some advice you've given to overcome those barriers? I'm speculating and assuming, but I'm sure people are really counting their money more than they did before. I'm sure people are really taking, you know, a lot of inventory of things that maybe they, not that they didn't track them and take inventory of them before, but I think, you know, now it's just kind of much more microscopic. So what are some of the barriers you're seeing? And then again, what are some of the ways that people are overcoming the barriers, or advice you would give on those?
Yeah, I think the main thing is that you have to be ready to put out like energy into your, say, marketing your business. Like, it's going to be a bit, you can't be complacent. And I think the people that are succeeding right now are evolving. They're working hard. They're pushing the needle on as many things as they can. That's going to stay the same. To your point, you know, knowing your numbers is key, you know, and that's one of the big things I do first in my consulting engagements is building a little spreadsheet that shows you, you know, how many leads or how many customers are you getting and how much you're spending on marketing and therefore how much you're spending to acquire those things. So really knowing your numbers and living in them and not being blind to them, even if you don't like the way they look right now,
right.
That's going to be a really big piece going forward, I think.
Yeah.
And you said about like just roadblocks and stuff holding it.
Yeah, to kind of get around those, some of those challenges, yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of times it's uncertainty which causes us to procrastinate. So yes, I'm biased in the sense that I'm an advisor, but working with someone who, like, hiring a consultant doesn't have to be expensive.
Right.
And it can have a significant upside. And, you know, finding someone who can give you advice or guidance that's tailored to your industry or tailored to your situation is a critical way, because even like just seeing your situation from the outside is really difficult. And
yes,
I'd say don't be scared to get a bit of help. You know, it's a small investment relative to the value of increase as well as the downside of not. And I'm doing that, you know, I do that just the same for my own business as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, spending, you know, anywhere from $2,000 to $10,000 on a coach or a mentor or an advisor can reap incredible dividends if it's the right person and that alignment is right. And And like you, I've seen that personally as well, you know, too, that you're going to get a return on that hopefully. So.
Yeah. And one thing I'll say is that it's funny that the people who tend to hire me are the ones who are already achievers and are already pretty successful.
Yes.
And I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't think they're like, well, I'm successful, so I'll hire you. I think that it's kind of a mindset of, you know, development, personal and professional.
Yes.
And it's uncanny, but the ones that kind of kick tires and don't get the value of advice are usually the ones that are struggling the most. And I get that there's some price sensitivity there, but you can get in the, you know, whether it's books, audiobooks, courses, you know, or a little bit of coaching or training can really point you in a direction that's massively valuable. So the weird thing is that the people who are most successful tend to be the ones that buy it, and that perpetuates success. And I think that's more of a mindset rather than, you know, a cause and effect, you know. The other way around.
I 100% agree. And I think it's the idea of, you know, the old saying that readers are leaders, that the, you know, the best investment you can make in yourself is reading a book. And so I think it's the same, just the same acknowledgement in human behavior that the ones that are reaching higher levels of fulfillment and success are also the ones who are constantly digging and curious and asking questions. And I mean, I've sat beside some incredibly successful people, and some of my favorite experiences have been when we're eating, you know, maybe it's a table full of business leaders or whatever. And most of the time, the person that is the most successful person at the table is the one asking the most questions to learn more information. And I think it's the same philosophy that you're talking about is those people that are living at that high of a level are constantly students of what's taking place. So, you know, the thing I would share with our listeners is if you're not investing in coaching or at minimum reading books or listening to podcasts or whatever, now's the time. Now is the time to really make that investment. And so I appreciate you saying that and pointing that out because that's been my experience as well. Yeah.
And I recognize it's kind of biased because like you and I are both educators and mentors and guides in some way. So it's not about buying services of some person, whether it's us, it's really just that general, like the people who are succeeding are the ones that are constantly learning and then applying and trying things.
Yes.
Like the people who take my advice, they succeed. And it's not because the advice is so good. It's because it's a plan that is cohesive. And the people who take parts of it or don't do it are the ones that don't or who... So you kind of have, it's marrying that action with learning and help.
Success is more about reception than it is anything else. In other words, success is more about receiving something and learning from it and taking it in and then maximizing what you've learned, executing it. And I think people make it too difficult. I think they, you know, it just becomes this huge thing they have to navigate. And it's like, no, the people that are the most successful and most fulfilled are the ones that are simply learning and executing and practicing. And kind of what you said about your blog, you write and you put it out. And that's what the most successful people do is they just continually learn and do and learn and do.
And all my blog posts aren't good. Like some of them are, some of them hit and some of them are just fine. Right. And that's okay because you know, the best photographers are the ones who've taken the most shots, not the ones who've planned the most specific ones.
Yes.
But also it's about doing 80-20 analysis without doing, you know, thinking in terms of jargon, but like, I had to shut down my paid membership for my coworking community this year to make room for my mentorship stuff. And I just looked at everything in my business. This is the thing that's creating the most work for the least return on investment. Mm-hmm. I need to cut something. So I had to make a cut. And now I just let everyone keep the content and they stay in the membership for free. And, but I have no obligation to create content on a hamster wheel for that group. So I think there's a big thing as well as doing and learning. It's saying no to some things that aren't working anymore, even if you love the idea of it.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest part of all of it, I think.
It is. It is. And especially if you are an entrepreneur or a self-employed person or you're building a business, I'm a confessed workaholic and I'm doing my best to learn to not, because as I'm studying people, you know, as I'm studying not just successful people, but, you know, spiritual guides and emotional mentors, et cetera, it's amazing almost how little they do, but how well they do it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's easy to get caught up. And I think this really applies to business owners, especially small business owners, because they may not have the budget. You know, I kind of want to circle back to what you said when you were actually talking about marketing teams. And I think that's why folks like you are so advantageous, because, you know, that for that business owner or that entrepreneur out there that feels like, I don't have the budget to invest in A, B, or C, but I am having to do all the work. I'm the accountant and the marketing agent and blah, blah, blah. For the price that they can pay someone like you, and the return again on that investment is incredible. I mean, they're just, you know, instead of doing everything yourself, it's actually learning to do less. And that's really how you find growth in all capacities, not just business, but interpersonal growth and et cetera. And so I just really want to, I want to kind of hammer down on that point that if you are listening and you're that person that's trying to do everything, that, you know, people like Kevin and other people we've had on the show, it's such a great investment to reach out to them and see what you can find. So yeah.
I mean, think about it, back to that air conditioner example. Yes, I almost bought the first company that came to me, but then I would have this thing that would break down every year or two, as opposed to what ended up being one of the better quality air conditioners that I had to go find a guy. You know, anyway, so the directional changes that can come from even just one call or short-term engagement with someone, a coach or mentor, a consultant, like, can be huge, you know? Yes. But the hardest thing for a type A person like you and I maybe would be doing less, right?
Right.
And that's what they say, right? Like, if you want to challenge a type A person, challenge them to do fewer things.
Yeah.
But it's so powerful, because spreading yourself too thin feels like you're achieving and pushing and creating new limits for yourself. And in some ways you are, but it also keeps your quality of your work and your focus and your energy spread too far out. And that's not a good thing either. No. So.
Well, let's face it. You talk about something that is not sustainable. And I can guarantee you one thing on the show. If you try and do everything yourself, you will burn out and your business will suffer and your family will suffer. And in the end, you will not arrive at the place that your dreams and desires have inspired you to arrive at. And so we can guarantee that. No ifs, ands, or buts. That's how it works. So yeah, reach out to someone. We on this show, Kevin, we often talk about mental health and the challenges of mental health. And especially in 2020, you know, the numbers are incredible of how people are, you know, really facing issues with mental health. But it's not just mental health, it's everything, right? When you try and do everything on your own and you try and do everything as an isolated situation and take over everything, it just doesn't work, man. It doesn't work.
No.
It doesn't work.
It really doesn't. And you do burn yourself out. And this year we all reacted to what was happening. And I think, and the collective exhaustion and, you know, you being an American was a very tumultuous time for, I'm Canadian, you know, but very tumultuous time for Americans, especially, but the world. Yeah. And there was a lot, there's been a lot going on, and, you know, you have to kind of monitor your inner being. I've invested in my home gym, as many people have as well. Yeah. And that is my secret to keeping my mind fresh. Right. Yes. And I had a baby this year, so I've had to be very constrained with how I allocate my time, but it's, you have to kind of, you have to really watch your inner world, you know, and nurture it.
Yes. Agreed. Kevin, this has been wonderful, man. Thank you for sharing your advice and your input, and anything you would like to leave with the people before we wrap up? Any other small tidbit you'd like to give them?
Not really, other than, you know, the answers are in your best clients or customers. And if you remember that and you just analyze, like, take a look at who's spending money with you and who makes you happiest, who buys the most, who refers you the most, who complains the least. And just analyze that. The answers are what your business challenges are there. You don't need anyone to tell you that. And if you follow that and you say, how do I get more people like this? How do I make my business exceptional and extraordinary for this kind of person? And you follow that continually and make some cuts where you need to, you're going to be fine. But that's probably the best piece of advice for you.
I love that. And I'll follow that up with, don't be afraid to ask your best customers why they do business with you. What brought them to you? What attracted them to you? What do they feel? What experience have they had? Because that you're right. The answers already exist. It's just a matter, again, of kind of digging them up and receiving them. So, yeah, great. I love it. Hey, Kevin, at the end of every show, we have a 5-question speed round we like to do. Just something kind of fun. One word answers only. Okay, are you ready?
I'll do my best.
Regarding books, do you prefer digital or paper?
Digital.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
What's a guilty pleasure that you have?
Ice cream.
Ooh, nice. And one thing you can't live without?
My phone.
And what's your favorite season of the year?
I know I was supposed to say my family. Obviously, they're that's assumed they're stuck with me. So, and my favorite season of the year, I would say springtime. I know a lot of people love fall, but spring is when the air starts to get warm and fresh. Anyway, spring.
Right, love it, man. I love it, Kevin. Thank you again for coming on the show. We appreciate it. Again, you've given people some really great advice and some great encouragement. So, brothers and sisters, make sure you go see Kevin's website. Go check out Kevin's website, kevin.me. We'll have that in the show notes as well. Also, we'll have in the show notes where you can connect with Kevin on social media. And make sure you subscribe to the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Mitch Gray Media, to find all of our episodes and more via video. And so, we hope you're doing well. We hope you have a great day, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mitch.